It's Thursday, April 2nd, and welcome to Higher IQ. If you've ever stayed at a job you didn't love because of the health insurance, or turned down a freelance opportunity because you couldn't afford coverage on your own, or felt a knot in your stomach during a layoff because losing your paycheck also meant losing your doctor, you've experienced something that almost no one in any other wealthy country deals with. The question is why your health insurance is tied to your employer at all. The answer is a wage freeze, a tax loophole, and 80 years of nobody fixing either one. Before World War II, most Americans didn't have health insurance. If you got sick, you paid the doctor in cash. Health coverage existed, but it was rare. In 1940, only about 20 million Americans had any form of private health insurance, and premiums accounted for less than 0.5% of disposable income. The idea that your employer would pay for your medical care was not standard practice. It was barely a concept. Then came the war. In 1942, with millions of men overseas and factories desperate for workers, inflation was becoming a serious threat. Congress passed the Stabilization Act, and President Roosevelt issued executive orders freezing wages and salaries. Companies couldn't offer higher pay to attract scarce workers. They needed another way to compete. The Stabilization Act had a loophole. It froze wages, but explicitly excluded insurance and pension benefits in a reasonable amount. Employers realized they could offer health insurance as a fringe benefit without violating the wage controls. It was compensation that didn't count as compensation. Workers got something valuable. Employers got to recruit. And the War Labor Board, whose primary concern was preventing inflation, allowed it because health insurance costs were tiny at the time. Then, the IRS made it permanent. In 1943, the IRS ruled that the cost of group health insurance paid by an employer did not count as taxable income to the employee. If your company spent $500 a year on your health coverage, you didn't owe taxes on that $500. This created an enormous incentive for both sides. For employers, health benefits were tax-deductible as a business expense. For employees, they were tax-free income. Buying health insurance through your job was suddenly much cheaper than buying it on your own, where you'd pay with after-tax dollars. The effect was immediate. Health insurance coverage tripled during the war, jumping from 12 million people in 1940 to over 30 million by 1945. After the war ended, the system should have been revisited. The wage freeze was gone. The labor shortage was over. There was no longer an economic reason for employers to provide health coverage. And there was a real alternative on the table. President Truman actively pushed for national health insurance, endorsing it in his 1948 State of the Union address. Senators Wagner, Murray, and Representative Dingell had been introducing national health insurance bills since 1943. None of them passed. The American Medical Association spent what was at the time a record amount on lobbying to defeat the proposals, calling them socialized medicine. The employer-based system, which had been a temporary workaround, became the permanent default, partly because the alternative was politically killed. Two additional forces locked it in place. First, unions fought to keep it. In 1948, the National Labor Relations Board ruled that health insurance was subject to collective bargaining, meaning employers had to negotiate over benefits just like they negotiated over wages. Health coverage became a centerpiece of union contracts in steel, auto, and manufacturing. Taking it away would have meant a fight with organized labor at the height of its power. Second, in 1954, Congress codified the tax exclusion into permanent law through the Internal Revenue Code. The wartime loophole became a permanent feature of the tax system. And Congress removed the original cap that the War Labor Board had placed on the benefit, which had limited tax-free health insurance to 5% of annual salary. Without that cap, there was no limit on how generous employer plans could be. The more expensive the plan, the bigger the tax advantage. That 1954 decision is arguably the most consequential tax policy choice in American healthcare history. It created a system where the federal government subsidizes employer-provided health insurance to the tune of roughly $329 billion a year in foregone tax revenue. It made employer-sponsored coverage the default for working Americans. and it made every other path to coverage, buying insurance as an individual, as a freelancer, as a small business owner, structurally more expensive because those purchases don't get the same tax break. Today, about 150 million Americans get their health insurance through an employer. That's nearly half the country dependent on a system that was invented as a workaround to a World War II wage freeze and made permanent by a tax code written in 1954. Every other wealthy country solved this differently. Germany built a system of non-profit sickness funds, funded by compulsory contributions from workers and employers, dating back to Bismarck in 1883. The UK created the National Health Service in 1948, funded by general taxation, free at the point of care. Canada built a single-payer system where the government pays, but private doctors provide the care. Japan requires all residents to enroll in government-allocated health insurance and sends them a postcard summarizing their earnings and any refunds. In Denmark, the government sends you a pre-filled health assessment and covers care through taxation. Most Danes spend 0 minutes a year thinking about health insurance. In the Netherlands, everyone is legally required to carry insurance, but the insurers are non-profit and regulated, and the government subsidizes anyone who can't afford premiums. France, Switzerland, Australia, Sweden, South Korea, Taiwan all have some version of universal coverage where your access to healthcare doesn't depend on where you work. The US is the only wealthy country where losing your job means losing your health insurance. Think about that for a second. In no other rich nation does getting laid off also mean losing access to your doctor. Nowhere else do they offer benefits, a major factor in which job you take. Nowhere else does starting a business or going freelance mean paying dramatically more for coverage or going without entirely. Economists have a term for the way health insurance distorts employment decisions: job lock. Studies have consistently found that workers stay in jobs they would otherwise leave because they can't afford to lose their coverage. One estimate suggests that employer-sponsored insurance reduces job mobility by about 25%. The system that was supposed to attract workers during a labor shortage is now keeping workers trapped in jobs they don't want. The U.S. spends more on healthcare per person than any other country on Earth, roughly twice the average of comparable wealthy nations. Despite that spending, Americans live shorter lives, face more barriers to care, and are more likely to skip medical treatment because of cost. About 9% of the population remains uninsured. The Affordable Care Act expanded coverage significantly, but it built on top of the employer-based system rather than replacing it. The fundamental architecture, the accident from 1943, remains intact. There's a quote from T.R. Reid, the journalist who wrote The Healing of America, that captures the absurdity of the American system better than any statistic. When it comes to treating veterans, we're Britain. For Americans over 65 on Medicare, we're Canada. For working Americans who get insurance on the job, we're Germany. For the 15% who have no insurance, the United States is Cambodia or rural India. The U.S. doesn't have one healthcare system. It has four, layered on top of each other, each built for a different population, none of them designed as a coherent whole. And the biggest one, the employer-based layer that covers 150 million people, exists because of a loophole in a wage freeze that ended 80 years ago. So if this comes up in conversation, here's how to think about it. Before World War II, almost nobody got health insurance through their job. The practice started because companies couldn't raise wages during a wartime freeze and used benefits as a workaround. The IRS made it tax-free in 1943. Congress made it permanent in 1954. Unions locked it into labor contracts, and by the time anyone thought about building something different, 150 million people were already in the system. Every other wealthy country found another way. The U.S. never did. The most important benefit in American life is an accident of history that nobody planned and nobody has been able to undo. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.